Well, welcome. This is the patch and settings management session with Configuration Manager. My name is Mark Florida. And
Wally Mead.
So what we're going to do is provide you sort of an overview of what we call our security features outside of endpoint protection, just the ones that sort of natively come with inside Configuration Manager. The agenda is actually pretty straightforward. I'm going to talk for a while about software updates. Wally's going to hand it over to talk about settings management. So, you know, what we have is a sort of general theme that if you attended some of our prior sessions, you're well familiar with, you know, empowering end users, simplifying our infrastructure, or unifying our infrastructure and simplifying administration. Specifically, what I'm going to do, though, is kind of skip past that and talk about what it means when you're trying to build a compliant management solution within inside of our product. It's not so as simple as, well, I'm just going to use DCM. It's really just using all of the features in Config Manager to really provide a nice overview of how you're using the solution. So when you kind of start off and you think about software updates, what you focus first on is how do you plan and configure software updates? How do you think about who your administrators are? How do you think about who you're going to delegate those rights to? How do you look at the end user experience to maximize your productivity? These are all things that you want to do up front as you sort of put together how you want those policies to be enacted upon. Then once that's done, the Config Manager system, if you will go off and assess compliance. If it's not compliant, it'll detect that it's missing some updates. It'll then go and apply those updates, and then it will report state back up to the console. One of the things that we've done in Config Manager 2012 is we tried to close the loop on this entire scenario all with inside of our console. We want to make sure that the administrator doesn't have to hop into, you know, WSUS, whether it be for, let's say, an endpoint protection scenario, or whether they have to use reports to help close out a monitoring gap that we might have in console. It's really about trying to make sure through the console that you can really achieve most of your common scenarios that you have. Settings management, very similar in approach that you take. And again, this is about how do you assess compliance all up, not just about software updates, but about the settings you want to enforce. With settings management, you obviously have to define your CIs. You know, we got some great collateral out there in the form of Solution Accelerator's Security Compliance Manager, I think that's the name of it, where you can basically import a number of CIs into your environment, or you can obviously create things by scratch as well. Similar to updates, you deploy them out. And then what Configuration Manager will do is they'll take those CIs, they'll look for any form of drift or lack of compliance. And then new in Configuration Manager 2012, you can not only monitor, which you could do in 2007, but you can actually now remediate those settings as well. Something that just occurred to me that we should probably, you know, put in here in the future is that we shouldn't probably end just here with endpoint protection. With our new application management feature, you can even think of that as being part of your all-up compliance as well. Application management is very much what we'll call a state-based or a desired state feature. So picture another row appearing here, which is just a mistake on my part, around your ability to define, you know, I got these core set of applications that I really need to have installed. You can use the app management feature for that, and it'll behave very similar to settings management. Again, making sure that an app has been detected. If it's not detected, go ahead and apply it. But really what we end here with is just endpoint protection. So endpoint protection kind of closing on that sort of unified security and compliance stack that we have in our product. That's again about making sure you have defined your anti-malware policies that you want to have in place, firewall policies, assign those out to collections. The endpoint protection agent itself will then read those and make sure that the compliance that you want to have is being adhered to, and then all of the information then makes its way back into the console. So especially with endpoint protection scenarios, we've implemented high-speed alerts so that you can tell if there's an anti-malware outbreak. And then we also allow the admin to take corrective action on things. You know, whether it be a threat that's in the wild and you need to force a definition update, we allow that functionality to be done with inside the console, or whether it's a scenario you want to just allow because it might be a false positive, you can, in the console, elect to make exclusions and push those out as well. But again, kind of the key message here is that when you think about compliance for your clients, it's not one feature. It's actually looking across all the features that we have, well, not to say all, but probably the four big features, and I only show three here, around making sure you have your apps deployed, your updates deployed, your settings enforced, and your endpoint protection levels defined. And then they all behave in a very similar fashion. They're all sort of based on the notion of the admin has an intent, and we, as the sort of config manager or endpoint clients, will carry out that intent and then return information back to the administrator so that you can understand, you know, at a high level how well protected you are, or if there's drift that you need to go remediate, we'll provide some tools for you to be able to do that as well. So specifically what I'm going to go into is around software updates. So with software updates, we have the, I'll do software updates and hand it over to Wally. We'll go into settings management. If you're interested in endpoint protection, we had just finished the session last hour and a half ago on that topic. So with software updates, it all starts with the role that we call the software updates point. So in this role is where you define, like you can see here barely in the screen, what type of products you want to download updates for. And with that, what you're basically doing is you're installing a role just like you would install any other config manager role. And that really defines which updates you're syncing from Windows or from Microsoft Update. What we end up doing is we end up syncing the catalog metadata from Windows Update, and then that allows the, that allows kind of a nice inbox solution for getting just your normal Windows Update collateral. The other thing that we support too is with System Center Update
Publisher,
SCUP, is the ability to get third-party updates. So we have some catalogs that are available, or you can even custom author your own catalogs. It gets the way you write those is very similar to just how any other patch applies. You write some detection logic, applicability logic, define how the patch should be applied if it is applicable. And then what you can do is you can import that catalog directly into Configuration Manager. So it's somewhat analogous to being able to get updates from Windows Update or Microsoft Update, but you're just providing your own catalog source for those. Then once you've kind of gotten all your updates in place, you can then determine where and how you want to be able to get content. So for a given update that you sync, you're really just syncing the metadata to start out with. Then what you can do is elect for the ones that you wish to have deployed in your environment. You can say, hey, I'd like to get the content for those as well. That's where, That's where you get the distribution points come into play. So that content comes in, it gets stored on your distribution points as part of a normal content package. We call them a deployment package in the product. And then you replicate those packages out just like you would replicate any other package metaphor that we have in our product today. So when you think about third-party updates, again, very similar kind of just high-level premise. However, the details are much different. You basically have this sort of separate authoring console where you go in and you author your custom updates. You then publish those into WSUS. WSUS ends up syncing those updates into Configuration Manager. And then the way just our normal clients work is very similar, is that you'll end up doing your normal scan processes against WSUS. But the actual content and the intent for what updates should be applied is all done through the Configuration Manager console. So kind of the overarching goal with most of what we do in the product is, again, trying to keep the administrator with inside the Config Manager console. That lessens the amount of training somebody might need, helps simplify the process, and we look to kind of carry that through as best we can throughout our scenarios. So that at a high level, and I'll walk this through once we get into the demo, is kind of how you decide what updates you want deployed. The next kind of piece here is around who you go target. So with Configuration Manager, we have a we have collections. Those are really the way in which you target updates. Collections can be very simple. They can have a membership of what we would call direct, where you basically just say this machine should get, should be part of this collection. It's just a direct assignment. Or they can be rich. They can be based on query logic. So I can grab things like if they're part of an AD site, for example. I can create a collection off of that, and those are ones that we refer to as sort of dynamic collections. We've also made some improvements in Config Manager 2012 that allow you to include and exclude other collections. That allows you to sort of simplify your query logic. You don't have to create these sort of massive queries. Instead, you can create simple queries and use an include or exclude rules to be able to kind of compose collections much quicker. The other reason that collections are very important isn't just so that you can target, it's really a security construct that we have in our product. So one of the common things that we run into is customers who set up different hierarchies, primary sites for different functional roles. Like, for example, you might have a server admin and a desktop admin, and they just don't want their different resources to be messed with. So what happens is in 2007 is you'd set up two different primary sites, one for the server person and one for the desktop person. With role-based administration in Configuration Manager 2012, you no longer have to set up separate sites. Instead, you use a feature that we call role-based administration to be able to scope the rights that a given administrator has to a set of resources. By resources, I mean devices or users. So kind of the power of this is that you can use software to really do your segmentation of who has access to what devices, rather than having to set up a separate server. So kind of in the scenario I described using RBA, all you need to be able to do is say, desktop admin, you have scopes to the desktop collection. Server admin, you have scope rights to the server collection. And then the two different admins, they can't touch the other resources at all. Also with RBA, we support the notion of security scopes. Security scopes are really just tags, if you will, that you can apply on what I call managed objects, like an app or a software updates group. What that allows you to do is, again, keep that segmentation of the desktop person can kind of create their own objects, they can be by themselves, and then the server person can do the same thing and they don't have to intermix at all. And it's, again, all about sort of providing that level of isolation that people use. The other kind of key thing with role-based administration is sort of a concept of a role. So when you have a software updates administrator, if you will, you may not want to have them have to know about software distribution. Just increases your training costs for them or operating system deployment. With the concept that we have in role-based administration around roles, you basically assign them a functional role, and we provide one out of box that's called the software updates administrator. And by giving them that role, what they can do is they can only interact with objects that are relative or relevant for the software updates feature itself. So they can see the software updates node, they can see updates, they can see update groups, but they can't see the OSD node, they can't see the application management node. They can see some shared nodes like collections, for example. And again, the whole point of that functionality is to not only make the administration of our security much simpler, it also helps to simplify the administrative experience, which then has downstream effects on really simplifying training that has to go on, questions that go on with how you support a delegated administrative model. And then just, somewhat similar to what we do in 2007 is there's that notion of, how do you have templates? So you're able to create deployment templates so that you can kind of go through a repeatable process. One of the things you're going to see me highlight is an alternate way to achieve kind of some repeat benefits of the system. So templates are great because what they allow you to do is sort of define something once and then reuse that thing over and over again. I think kind of the one thing that's a little bit lame with templates is that you have to reuse them all over again. I'm going to talk about a new feature that we put into Config Manager 2012 around auto-deployment rules that they don't require you to have to do anything. You just basically set them up on a schedule and the thing just goes off and works at an interval that works for you. So this isn't, super new information from where we're at with 2007, but maintenance windows. So this, again, is trying to look at not just making sure compliance is hit on a device, it's making sure that the end user experience is the right one you want to have. So like in a server environment, hitting a maintenance window is super important for a variety of reasons. The same can apply to in a client or in client management scenarios as well. You may have a window of time where you really want to hit certain updates, but in general, we kind of see this functionality play out more in the server space. We also have the concept too in the end user or the client management space, if you will, around non-business hours. So kind of the way I think about non-business hours is these are somewhat like, and don't take this too literally, but they're somewhat like maintenance windows that the end user defines themselves. So what the end user is allowed to do is define when their normal business hours are. So we'll default out of box to something, I can't remember for sure. It's like 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., something like that. And what you can do then on a per deployment is you can just check a box that says, you know what, don't force an update to occur during somebody's business hours unless you've gone past the enforcement timeline. So what's great about this is, you might have an end user who just sort of locks their machine or logs off and goes home. What we can do is we can come back after business hours and apply these updates when an end user isn't logged on at all. And then the kind of last piece of this as well is that we do, if you want to show this, we do supply controls to the end user. You know, if you want to be able to postpone prior to deadline, we have the Software Center experience, which is a rich application that resides on a desktop for you to be able to, you know, force an install of updates to be able to, you know, set them for a particular time. Click. Okay. So distribution points. So distribution points again are important, especially depending on your WAN topology. They can be more important or less important. But distribution points are very nice to basically cause sort of one copy to go across your WAN links. Even in scenarios like definition updates, where the definition files might be really small, this can be very beneficial, because even though those things might be small, the way the publishing system works is that, I forgot the days, every couple weeks or so, they release a full definition update, which might be 40 megs or so, and that can add up, especially if you have like 20 clients pulling the content over the wire. So what's advantageous about using software updates management to deploy updates and definition updates is that you can leverage your content disk solution that you already have in place for features like application management, and then you can control the WAN bandwidth that goes across those links. That's a bit different than customers who maybe have, let's say, a single WSUS deployment. You know, we would run into that a lot with Endpoint Protection 2010, FEP 2010. We'd run a lot into customers who had to use WSUS because of the capabilities to write an automatic deployment rule. But as a result of using WSUS natively, you can't leverage the Config Manager content distribution system. So in 2012, we really kind of solved that scenario where, you know, you don't need to go to WSUS to do your administration. And by doing everything with inside the Config Manager console, you can then benefit from being able to kind of ride along the normal config content distribution channels that we have in place. Another option that we afford people too as well, and this again is about trying to limit the end nodes from all pulling content all over the WAN at the same time, is the feature branch cache. So this is, you know, as described, it basically allows a client on a subnet to be able to try to get content from another client on the subnet, which has obvious benefits in terms of reducing the total amount of content that can go across the wire. You know, ideally, depending on, again, this kind of depends on how you want to use the product, but you know, if you're looking at scenarios where you got a reasonable, a WAN link, and you know that you don't need to distribute, you know, massive amounts of content, this can be a really great answer for a lot of update scenarios. It might even enable you to, let's say, retire a distribution point and leverage branch cache for those scenarios. And then, of course, we support internet-based users. That's just using our normal sort of internet management capabilities. Wally, in our overview session, kind of talked about some improvements at the real high level. What we did with what we improved in 2012 around our internet-based clients is that we made it easier to deploy the solution. The reason it's easier is because it's not an all-or-nothing proposition anymore. You can actually determine which of your clients you want to be managed through the internet-based functionality and what roles or site systems they need to hit, and then you can enable it just for those sort of subset of users. And that can be a great way to kind of manage, you don't have to manage everything. You can reduce the number of nodes that you're hitting. You can also really focus in on the discrete systems that need to get, you know, certificates applied. So it really just kind of lessens the surface area of configuring that functionality. The other thing, too, to kind of call out here is that the clients themselves, and this is, and I'll probably touch on this on some SP1 functionality that we're doing as well, is that In SP1, so this is that CTP build that's coming out later this week, clients themselves, even though they're being scanned and they get policy for updates from Configuration Manager, you can configure it so that those clients can fall back to Windows Update or Microsoft Update for content. So what's kind of good about that is that you don't necessarily have to worry about getting, let's say, an internet-facing distribution point set up. You can instead just say, you know what, I like all the policy controls that I get with Configuration Manager, so I'll make that happen. However, if you're on the internet, why do I want to go back to a distribution point that I stood up just to get content for Microsoft, which is already on the cloud? So what we allow you to do in SP1 is just have that client fall back directly to Windows Update or Microsoft Update to get that content. Okay, whoops, I'm sorry. So what I'm going to talk about here is kind of that second piece around how do we assess and perform compliance. So at kind of the root of it, this is, you know, somewhat similar to, I'm sure you folks already know, the client itself, what it'll do is it'll run a patch scan against WSUS, be able to determine what patches are missing, and then we store that scan state into WMI. What we then do is we take all that information and we send it, you know, back up the hierarchy, so that inside the console you can get a view of where are you at with compliance. So you can tell not just compliance but applicability. So it's, you know, look at a list of updates. You can be able to see, you know, who requires it, what's the how many already have it installed. That's kind of what that diagram shows you. I'll show you what that looks like in the console in a second here. Then what you can do is you can make a determination based off of that information which updates you want to go download. Like, for example, you can be able to take a list of all the updates that you may have synced, and you can write some search criteria that says, you know, give me just the updates that are applicable for my environment. You can then select those and say, I'd like to download content for those. Kind of the advantage of that is you don't have, you know, massive amounts of content you need to manage. You can be fairly selective with what you want to download. And kind of the last phase here is, you know, how do you remediate? So, kind of key to this is, you know, hopefully the obvious, which I don't think we cover here, is just, you know, what we want for remediation is ideally something you can set up once and just let the system itself self-heal and fix those clients. So with automatic deployment rules, that's the feature that we implemented in 2012 GA, so the release that came out in April. Admittedly, we put that feature in place just is for endpoint protection, definition updates. That was the thing that sort of spurred us to do that work. However, once we got kind of deeper into it, we realized that automatic deployment rules could actually play some value in just your normal cyclical nature of updates. You know, every patch Tuesday, new updates come out. So we started to look at automatic deployment rules as maybe a way that we could kind of change how administrators approach software updates management. So, one of the things you'll kind of hear me talk about when I go through the console is that I'm not sure when it started. At some point in time, there was a concept of a sustainer package or a sustainer update package that that administrators would use. And I understand why they use it and why that was needed. But what we really want to do is to try to move the customer base away from using that concept. And I'll try to articulate to you and show you a demo here about how we think about best practices going forward.
It was January 7, 2003.
Oh, perfect. Yes, Wally. Yes. Well, of course Wally would know. So that was year 12 on the team for him. So.
No, 11.
Oh, sorry. Okay, so again, just kind of going over this. Automatic deployment rules, they behave very similar. They behave very similar to how just normal updates work. It's just automatic. So you can kind of think of it as all the core mechanics, you know, update scanning, going to get, going to WSUS, see what's applicable, and so on and so forth. All that's the same. Automatic deployment rules are really about how do you put in place a feature where the administrator can kind of set their intent once and be able to just let the system run and go off and keep clients up to date. So if you're paying enough attention, when I walk through kind of the previous stuff, there was a lot of words like admin has to go download or admin has to define who to target. Automatic deployment rules takes care of all that for you. You're able to, in essence, you're able to basically take like a template, if you will, and be able to have the system reevaluate that template at some interval that you choose. So the power of that, again, is that you can just get into some fairly systematic approaches to how you might deal with, let's say, Patch Tuesday or definition updates, which I'll show you in a second. But again, kind of the same mechanics just work after you do that. You just sort of think of the server side, if you will, doing a lot of the quote-unquote day-to-day administration that you may have had to do manually in the past. Okay, so let me get into here. Show you how this plays out. Okay, perfect. So what I have here is just this is one of our newer SP1 sites. So this is where you get a list of software updates. Here is what I was referring to before about how once you define your SUP and you elect what type of content to bring into the system, you can tell what's required for me, what's already been installed. This is, you know, fairly similar to how we had in the product before around just a long list of updates. So I'm not going to go into SUP configuration or things like that. It's fairly consistent with what we've done in the past. Now, if we sort of think about, if we kind of think first about definition updates. Definition updates, the scenario is actually pretty simple, and simple in terms of the net effect that you want to have. The reason it's simple is because definition updates, they get released, you have an active one, and then they have a set of, let me just do this. Definition. So what you can see, like for endpoint protection, you basically have, and you can tell just by glancing at the icons, you basically have, you know, kind of your most current one there in green, and then you have a number of expired updates. So some work that we put in place to in order to make the automatic scenarios work is we put in some mechanics to automatically go clean up expired content as well as superseded content. So you, there's some controls for you to fine tune that depending on how you need to do that. But the basic concept with definition updates is that it's a fairly known thing that you're dealing with. You get one that's, you know, most recent, and then you get a whole slew of these expired ones, and this pattern just repeats itself over and over again. And the advantage of that is that it's super easy to just go, oh great, I can go write an auto deployment rule. I can go create an auto deployment rule for definition updates. Here in the console, I just pre-created one just for time, which allows me to, allows me to just pick the type of updates I want to be able to automatically deploy. So endpoint protection 2010 definition updates is really all I'm looking for here. And what this criteria is basically going to do is it's going to run against all the updates that you are pulling down from your software updates point, and then it's going to grab those updates. And based off of those updates, it's going to put those into an update group. So what you have here is the concept of, do you want to add it to an existing group or create a new group? For definition updates, since the pattern is so clear, it just happens, you know, like almost clockwork, and since they all get expired, it doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense to, every time you run the rule, create a new group, because in essence, you'll create a bunch of groups with a bunch of expired updates, and you only have one group that's really active. So what we tell people to do is just, just every time you run the rule, basically grab the new update, put it in the group, and then the system itself, depending on how you manage expired stuff, will expire those updates accordingly. So you end up with just one group, one software updates group left over for definitions. The other thing you can tell at the top of the screen there, or near the top, is the target. So with an auto deployment rule, you're able to define who should get those definition updates. So I picked all systems. I mean, another common thing to do is maybe have a collection for clients that have endpoint protection enabled. You know, that way you can just target just those out. But the point being is that with auto deployment rules, you're hopefully starting to see that you're taking the sort of mental steps that people go through, like what are the updates I want to deploy, how should I group them, who should I target, and you're able to put this into a single object, this auto deployment rule, which will then reevaluate on a schedule. So that's where we come here with this evaluation bit. And somebody earlier had the best eyes I've seen where they noticed a spelling error, but it is schedule. So what you do is you're able to specify a schedule. So since definition updates are able to evaluate, since definition updates come out every 8 hours, in SP1 CTP, we now support the ability for definition updates to be distributed every 8 hours. In our release in April, the 2012 general availability release, we only supported once a day. So that was one of the improvements that we made in Service Pack 1. But again, the point being here is that you can define your schedule to run. What we also do is we allow you to chain this rule evaluation, which is the second option, around your SUP sync. Because again, it's about auto deployment rules are running against your software updates that you've downloaded. So typically, you want to make sure the SUP sync happens first so that you get your updated list of updates, and then you can run your rules, your auto deployment rules, against your list of updates that are in the product. Then the other thing that you can do too, and this gets into more of my sort of analogy that an auto deployment rule is kind of a marriage of many different concepts, one being a template. This is where you basically define, you know, things that you're accustomed to. You know, when do you want these updates to be available? When do you want the deadline to occur? And you get sort of the same type of functionality that might be exposed in a template. We just will reapply this every time the auto deployment rule runs. And again, similar, there's user experience. You can set up alerts. Just very standard stuff for just doing a normal deployment. So that's kind of auto deployment rules for definition updates. Again, it's a fairly simple scenario because of the way the publishing happens. A much more complicated scenario becomes monthly, patch Tuesday, if you will, because those updates don't necessarily get expired. You know, they might last for a while, which then necessitates why for half of Wally's career, people have been using sustainer packages and why that's been an approach that's happened. So the other mystery we haven't unearthed is at some point a requirement or somewhat of a product support statement came out that we would only support 500 updates in a given deployment or something like that. We're not really sure where all of this started, but it actually was fairly accurate based off of 2007, so there must be some legs to it. But what we've done in 2012 is we actually tried to firm up our story about how people should be using software updates, and that's kind of why we talk about this at sessions. So part of that was sort of a realization that we actually needed to define some, you know, reasonable practices we think people should follow, then we need to make sure we're testing them in such a way. So what we've concluded is that, you know, sort of based on scenario and based on some good testing performance standards we have, is that you can basically deploy in a group up to 1,000 updates now. After you hit 1,000 updates, we now block you. So even in the UI, you won't be able to add more into a software updates group. But we don't believe that's a problem, and I'll explain why we don't think it's a problem for right now. And it all starts with auto deployment rules. So what I've done here is think of this as a new way to do monthly patching. I've created an auto deployment rule. The auto deployment rule here, though, is different than for definition updates, primarily because I'm going to create a new group at each time I run the evaluation. So I've set this auto deployment up for basically creating a new group. Obviously, the criteria is different. You know, I'm not looking just for simple definition updates from endpoint protection. Rather, I'm looking for, you know, something that's radically different. And then my time horizon, too, is boxed as well. Because what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to evaluate these on the second Tuesday of every month. So I want to run this rule second Tuesday of every month. I want to grab all the updates that have occurred 1 month prior, and then I want to put those into a new group. So you can kind of think of it as, if I were to run it today, it would create a June group. And then if I had run it last month, it would be a May group, an April group, and so on. So if you kind of think about just the life cycle of an update, you know, 2 years or so, you sort of picture a console where you might have 24 groups that tie back to how often you fired automatic deployment rules. And then what you end up doing is you can have those groups assigned out to whatever collections you want to target, like all systems, for example. The advantage of going through that model is that I guess I have yet to see a patch Tuesday where we release 1,000 updates. So that kind of keeps you under the 1,000 update limit. So that's
why are y'all laughing?
Yeah. That's one advantage. And the other advantage is you sort of put in place this very sort of predictable nature in which the system can run. For customers that are kind of worried about making it too automated, like I don't want to implicitly deploy right afterwards, we do have a knob, a control inside auto deployment rules, where you can actually create the group but maybe leave it up to an administrator to do the final deploy action. So there is some sort of, you know, varying tiers of comfort with automation that we understand. So now that you've kind of created these groups, if you will, I'll kind of show you what that looks like in the console. And you'll kind of notice I was a little brief on my demo prep, but hopefully this makes sense. What I've done, just for simplicity, is I created two groups, which is basically updates for 2010 and updates for 2011. Those just happen to have less than 1,000 updates just because I wrote the queries a certain way and only brought in a certain set of updates for those. But again, imagine those maybe being more suited for like a June update or a May update, something like that. The key to this whole thing is not just that you can deploy these groups out. One of the key things, again, to getting rid of the sustainer package is knowing your overall compliance. And that's where the overall compliance group comes into play. So just to make sure this isn't too confusing, a given group can contain more than 1,000 updates. You just can't deploy that group if it has more than 1,000 updates. However, you can have a group like, let's say, overall compliance. Let's see if this, I can't remember how many I put in here, so hopefully this works out. I'm pretty sure this has like 1,500 updates or something like that. Yeah, so it's over 1,000. I put a cap in the console, so the console caps out at just showing me 1,000, and I can kind of clear it here to show the full scope, I guess. This group contains, 1,400 updates. So I wouldn't be able to deploy this group. However, what's advantageous about this is that I can actually see compliance for this group. Does that, hopefully that makes sense? So that gets you out of the need for the sustainer package. So what you, so basically what you do every month, if you will, is, you know, you run the auto deployment rules, they create these groups, and I think the one part of the scenario we haven't closed out very well is you then add the members for these groups into your overall compliance group. And that's probably the last mile we need to go to within the product to really close out, and maybe we can get to an SB1, maybe not, but the point being is that, you know, I'd have to basically select all of these guys, because this was my update for, let's say, June or for 2010 in this example, and then I basically hit edit membership, and then I can assign it to my all-up compliance group. And then as a result, that all-up compliance group ends up being, in essence, your sustainer package, but you're really just using that for compliance purposes. And then again, you know, hopefully we can kind of work on that workflow going forward. So I think that's all I wanted to highlight. So, yeah. The overall compliance group that I showed you can have as many updates as you want to put in it. I don't know if we've put a cap on it. The main perf problem we have is, I think, with WSS scanning. That's why we limit the, you know, it's the client scan processes. That's why we limit the deployment, the numbers you can deploy. So server-side, we can reconcile a lot of this stuff because a lot of our compliance assessment we do server-side can be summarized. You know, we can run those as sort of these asynchronous tasks that don't impact the performance of the overall system. There was one other thing I wanted to highlight, and this has been covered in other sessions as well. I just wanted to make sure it was clear. What we did was, again, trying to complete the end-to-end scenario for the administrator. We built a lot of in-console monitoring. So, for example, I apologize, I probably should have just built a richer hierarchy so you would really get the point here. But we now have a node where you can actually see your SUP sync status. I just happen to have just a very simple site with a single SUP that's going right to Microsoft Update. But picture this with multiple entries if you have downstream software updates points. You're able now to see the status of the sync actually happening in console. You don't have to go to the logs like you used to have to go do. The other thing too is just, and this is consistent across all of our objects that you can deploy. You can actually now see in console, like this is definition updates. And as you can tell, I'm a terrible administrator. I got a bunch of unknown machines and some errors, but the point is at a glance, I can understand, you know, within console who's compliant with the content, like definition updates, who's not. You can then drill in and find those clients that, you know, are in a bad state and go out and try to fix them. Okay, so with that, I think I remembered everything from that. I kind of hit all the high points. So let me cut back to the PowerPoint. Okay. Don't know why I'm having trouble with this clicker. So let me just fast forward through the stuff, just looking at the clock. So again, what we're doing here is, you know, to kind of bring this whole thing together is you set up your SUP, determine what products you want to get in the box. You then decide which ones you want to deploy. And the way that we sort of talk about which ones you want to deploy is really looking at the applicability for given updates in your environment. Once you make that determination, you pull content down, you distribute them out, clients get remediated, everyone's happy. In terms of best practices, again, you know, update groups. You can again exceed 1,000, but you can't deploy those if you do exceed 1,000. So again, think about update groups as, you know, having that one all-up compliance one. However, if you want to deploy them, you got to keep them under that number. And again, 1,000 for kind of the practice that I talked about. You know, running a rule every month, you should be well within that. The other thing, too, is that we have a migration framework. If you're thinking about moving from, and hopefully everyone is, moving from Config Manager 2007 to 2012, what that will do is it'll translate over your, if you're terminology-wise, you notice the difference between update list, update groups. That'll allow you to kind of keep that, you know, to keep those grouping concepts that you had in the previous product into the product that you're migrating to. So if you happen to have, let's say, a sustainer package with a bunch of updates already in it, you don't need to rework that. You can migrate that thing over, continue to use it as is, in the new practice I was talking about using auto deployment rules, that's something I would do moving forward. I wouldn't necessarily go back and reverse engineer the past. Delegated admins, again, you can use RBA to sort of, you know, get away from having separate site servers to be able to segment out your administrative group. I already talked about that point. And then the other thing that we did is we did do some under-the-cover stuff around client optimization. That's, again, why we think we can, you know, deal with these, you know, updates coming down. And the other kind of key thing that I just didn't touch on in the demo, it gets a little gnarly, is there's some fine-tuning configuration options you can have about how you want to manage supersedence. That was another sort of customer ask that we would get, is there's a discrepancy, or there was, I should say, between what WSUS supported in terms of managing supersedence. So we've tried to close that down. And then the same with expired updates. There's some controls that you can tune to really manage, you know, how you want to handle expired updates. Okay, so with that, I get a hand over to Wally.
Now you're up to the comedy portion of the session. No, thank you, Mark. One of the cool things that Mark talked about is this entire flow. One of the cool things is that, remember the slide he had before? We had all three different technologies here, and he mentioned application deployment as well. They all follow the same workflow. So once you've learned one feature of the product, you have a great grasp on what the next feature, how it works. It's just a little bit different in the UI. It's a little bit different things you have to tune or touch here and there. But for the most part, you're doing your planning and configuring your infrastructure. You're then doing assessment on what you want to do. And then you have your remediating non-compliance. It happens for all the different feature areas. He mentioned application management as well because of the state-based nature of it. So you're going to see, and Mark already covered this earlier, the same stuff happens. So for settings management, which you guys used to know as DCM, Desired Configuration Management, what we've done is taken the same DCM engine that you guys know that is used in software updates already, and we allow you now to scan systems for compliance, including software updates. You can do that inside your baselines that I'll show you later on, but for other things outside of software updates, such as corporate registry keys or specific file versions or WMI settings that you might have. So you can scan those for compliance. And what we've added really in 2012 is a big win for you guys is remediation, the ability of remediating or fixing those non-compliant systems. DCM in the ConfigMan 2007 product doesn't have that remediation feature built into it. You can do it through software distribution after the fact, but not as part of the DCM process. So as far as your planning configuring phase, you have to define your standards. What is it that you think is a standard for your corporation? Is it a registry key? Is it a WMI setting? Is it a file version on a desktop? What is your standard and what do you want to monitor for configuration drift? And then you create those settings or your standards in configuration items, the individual things you want to scan for, and baselines being groupings of items that you want to scan for on clients. So here's what that looks like graphically. And if you're in the overview session, you saw the same slide earlier. But you have the same infrastructure, a configuration manager site. So you have a site server with the admin console. You have your management point, which is where clients get their policies from. You don't have to have a software update point. You don't have to have distribution points for settings management because it's all done through policy. But I, as the admin, I go to the big blue boxes in there where it says baseline configuration items. I define what type of CIs or configuration items I want to create. What is it that I want to monitor for my compliance? You can see there's Active Directory, there's Filebase, there's software updates, there's registry, WMI, SQL, XML, whatever you want. So I create the individual configuration items that I want to scan for in my environment. I don't have to scan all clients for all configuration items. I do that through my baselines. I then add those appropriate configuration items to an appropriate baseline. And you're going to create multiple different baselines in your organization. You then deploy those baselines, just like Mark was deploying software update groups. You're going to deploy a baseline out to your clients. And that will cause those clients on the next policy scan, policy download, they'll do an evaluation off that baseline to see whether they're compliant or not with the individual configuration items in that baseline. They'll report back compliance through state messages, just like you would have for software updates. And then if you choose to implement remediation, you can go ahead and have appropriate settings remediated. You may not want to do remediation. You may just want to be in a monitor-only or notification-only mode. And in that case, you can implement alerts if you wish to, and then view your non-compliance or compliance, whatever is appropriate, in the console. So Mark showed you the deployment node. You have the same type of scenario for configuration management through your settings policies, and I'll show you that coming up. And you can obviously do both. You can do compliance reporting through alerting. You can do also remediation if you wish to. Down at the bottom in the box we have, talk about some of the improvements we made from the DCM feature that you guys know from 2007 to the compliance and settings management features in 2012. So copy settings, the ability taking settings for one configuration item or one configuration item and move it over to another configuration item without having to recreate it. Triggering console alerts. I'll show you that in the demo. The ability of generating an in-console alert when your SLA is not met for compliance or you fall below your compliance SLA. Richer reporting. You notice that in all three of the presentations we've done today, we've not shown you a single report. We do have great reports. I believe the RTM release has 423 reports, and SP1 will have more reports than that. So that's quite a number of reports that are available. They're all implemented through SRS. However, our goal is, certainly that you do reporting, but our goal, as Mark was talking about and showed you, we want you to be able to do as much monitoring as possible through the in-console experience, not having to go to the reports to drill in and see where your compliance level is. Certainly, you're going to have people that want to know what's going on, and you don't want to give them the console. So you'll give them the URL to the report manager so they can run the appropriate reports that they want. But we're not showing you reports just because we want to show you the in-console experience, get you there, get you familiar with it, and get you utilizing it as much as you can. Versioning. I mentioned the scenario earlier that Mark had created a baseline last week, and we were above our SLA, so compliance was great. He checks his console today, and all of a sudden, our SLA is not met. So we've got an alert generated, and he wants to know what happened. Well, in the old days, you have to go through and manually dig through everything to figure out what happened. Now, in the console, he can find the configuration item baseline that is failing or not hitting SLA, and he can very easily highlight it and say, show revisions. He can see the exact date and time any administrator made any change, and then compare what the revision was and see that, oops, Wally changed something on Sunday, so now things are failing. And he can go back and fix whatever change I had inadvertently put in place. And then he mentioned the configuration packs through the Solution Accelerator team or a lot of third parties or other Microsoft product groups creating things. Okay, the assessing compliance phase is once you've created your configuration items, added them to baselines, deployed those baselines, your clients will then get those policies at the next policy polling interval. Whether you target them to computers, devices, or users, you can also deploy settings to users to change their appropriate configuration. Next policy polling interval, appropriate for whichever type, we'll go ahead and download those, and we'll go through an evaluation phase. We have a built-in randomization factor, just like for software updates, to prevent the flood on the network of all clients downloading stuff and reporting compliance at the same time. So we have a randomization feature in there to help control or spread out that traffic across the wire. So once that client has randomized its value, kicks off the evaluation, does its evaluation, stores its information in WMI just like we do for software updates, and then we report that through state messages, just like through software updates. Now, when you're creating your configuration items, and the slide's probably out of spot, one of the cool things we've added in 2012 is the ability of alleviating administrator fat fingering, or you got a cast on, you can't type very well. So I'm going to type really poorly when I do my demos. One of the very cool things we've added is the ability of browsing to a system and finding the file, the registry, WMI, whatever you want. You can find it on a computer, browse to it, and then immediately we'll accept that as your configuration setting that you want to look at. And then you just tell us what compliance level you want on it, whether it's true or false, on or off, or whatever the appropriate values are. So we do allow you to do some of that browsing for some of those specific types of settings that you want to look at. And then I mentioned the revisioning capabilities, the ability of seeing who has made changes, when they made those changes, and specifically what was changed. So Mark doesn't have to go in there and drill into his CI that he created and my revision of it. He can just say, compare. And it will show him, it'll highlight for him exactly what I changed in that configuration item. So he'll know exactly what I did change. He can see what I did. Oops, well, he set the registry key to the improper one. And then, again, fix it as necessary. And here's the screenshot of browsing to the file system to find a specific version of a file. You can see it says the file must exist and the file version must be greater than 8.00. So not only is the file there, it's a corporate version of the application, but is this the right version of the application that's installed in the client computer? So you can go ahead and get very, very specific to your environment. Here's a screenshot of revision history. You can see this one has 8 different revisions on it. It shows you exactly who made the change, whether it's DCM admin or administrator, the date and time. If you select the non-current ones, if I selected anything from 1 to 7, the lower left-hand button that says compare with current revision would illuminate. I could click that and it would show me what the changes are from that revision to the current version that's being implemented to my baseline. And then here's just showing you, again, looking at your configuration baseline and then looking at the revision down at the bottom. So what revision of the baseline and the CIs are you using inside that baseline? Okay, then deploying the baseline, you can target to users or devices. If you're targeting the users, it's ACE key current user information, and it will happen for each user as they log on. When the user logs on, we automatically retrieve policies, and we'll go ahead and implement those settings that are appropriate if they're set for remediation. So you can do that. You can also target for devices, as traditionally people have done, because you're looking normally at systems that are corporate standards, corporate assets. You want to make sure that they're standard. Role-based administration, we have a specific security role for compliance settings manager. We have a security role for software updates manager. We have a security role for endpoint protection manager. We have 14 built-in security roles that provide the appropriate console attributes and features to implement the appropriate scenario that that role provides to them. And we've already talked about the CI revision history. And this is just showing the process of deploying a baseline. So once you have created all my CIs that I want, I create my baseline, I want to go ahead and deploy it. In this case, they've selected in the upper right the config baseline. If you want to do remediation, oops, I don't have it selected here. You would select the top checkbox that says remediate noncompliance rules when supported. And I'll show you this in a demo coming up shortly. When you do that, the next checkbox becomes available to you, which says do remediation within inside my maintenance windows. So Mark talked about maintenance windows earlier. You may want to only have remediation happening during maintenance windows because your remediation may involve changing stuff that you want to control when that happens. So by default, if you say remediate, it's going to automatically only allow you to remediate during maintenance windows. So you have to appropriately configure that if you wish. And then generating alert, if you want to have an alert generated in console when you're not meeting your SLA, you select that checkbox, set in your threshold there. Target your appropriate collection that you want to hit. And then how often do you want to go ahead and do your re-evaluation? You just don't want to evaluate one time because maybe you're out of compliance now and then you get remediated, put into compliance. Or maybe you are in compliance and then Wally goes in there, logs into your system, and I do some funky stuff and you're no longer in compliance. So you want to know when you drift out of compliance again. So you want to, on a periodic schedule, re-evaluate all those baselines so that you can either get back into compliance if necessary or be notified when you're out of compliance if you're not doing remediation. And then here's a picture of an alert. AJ showed you this if you're in the endpoint protection presentation right before this one. He showed you this is from the alerts view as opposed to being in the compliance and settings management view and seeing the alert there. And I'll show you that view. Okay, then lastly is assessing your compliance. And here it's showing you the in-console reporting, in-console monitoring. So on the left-hand side, it's showing you compliant nodes. And you'll see it's your assets. It tells you what your CIs are and the appropriate assets for the highlighted CI. And then on the right-hand side, it's non-compliance. So it'll show you the individual configuration items that are non-compliant. And then down at the bottom under asset details, you'll see the specific assets that are non-compliant. So you can see who's compliant and who's non-compliant from directly in the console without having to run a report. We also have added in the 2012 product, made it very, very simple for you to create a collection out of this. So maybe you're doing something that doesn't support remediation. And we don't support remediation for all configuration item types. So maybe you're doing file system browsing, and we don't support remediation of file system. You have to do software distribution for that. So you want to create a collection of those non-compliant systems that have the wrong version of the file out there. All I do is go to my baseline, my deployment, right-click and say create collection. and ask me compliance, non-compliant, unknown, error, whatever state you want. And say non-compliant, and it immediately walks you through Wizard to create a collection. And then you get a query-based collection of your non-compliant systems. And if I remember, I'll show you that in my demo, so remind me to do that. I'll probably forget. You guys remind me to do that. So if you don't see it, it's up to you guys. It's your fault. And here's a sample report, just an overall baseline report. It shows you the different baselines we have, three different ones here with different CIs in them, the revisions, and then your compliant, non-compliant values. And you can see all the numbers there for compliant, non-compliant, failed, and enforced. The enforced means remediated. All those are, have underlines under them, which means they're hot links or hyperlinks. You click that number, and it'll drill into another report specifically on those 1,000 compliant systems for that base, the CI, or those 100 non-compliant systems. So it'll drill in a report for you automatically. Okay, the remediation. Oh, here's what I was looking for. So if you want to do remediation, you have to configure it in two spots. One spot is in the configuration item itself. You have to state that the CI is going to do remediation or it supports it. And then when you add the, when you deploy the baseline, you have to state, I want this baseline to remediate. The benefit of doing this way, having you do it both places, is maybe you want to configure your CI to always remediate. However, for testing phase, you don't want to make changes yet. You just want to see my non-compliance level. So I can have the CI set for remediation, but not the baseline. I deploy the baseline, it'll come back and give me my compliance level. Hey, you're non-compliant with these 200 clients or whatever that number was. And now if I want to go ahead and change, and okay, I'm all confident that this is going to work, I can go ahead and go to my deployment, flip the bit to make it remediate on my deployment. Next reevaluation schedule on the client is going to go ahead and then do remediation. So you can do a phased approach of your DCM. You can basically make DCM like it is in 2007 with just the left-hand box screenshot. And if you want to do the remediation, you can have left and right side. Do both of those, and then you're hitting the what we call DCM set, or I call it DCM on steroids, taking DCM and giving it more power than it had before. Okay, let's go ahead and show you a demo of this stuff. All right, so we're going to go to assets compliance, and we're going to go to compliance settings. Oops, yes, we're going to change the button first. Thank you. Banna White, or whoever the appropriate...
Thanks, Wally.
You're welcome, Banna. All right, so here's configuration items. We've got a whole bunch of configuration items already built in, or not built in, but created in the demo environment, so 37 of them. You can see a number of these are IE9 computer settings, a configuration pack that's been imported. One of the cool things is if you guys have already been using DCM in 2007, you can take your you can export your configuration packs that you've created today and directly import them into 2012. And we'll do the conversion of the schema underlying that as you import them. So you just go up here to the import configuration data, and you point us to a configuration baseline, a configuration pack, and we'll import the CIs and the baselines as part of that, and they're directly usable. Whether it's something you created, whether it's something you got from our one of our partners, whether it's something you got from our solution accelerator team. And we've got a bunch of them in here. We've got a couple that have been pre-created. I'll show you what they look like that we're going to use. We're going to use these couple that are, say, malware modified settings, clear URL type history, as well as reset IE homepage. So let me just go ahead and show you these two real quick, and then I'll show you how to create one. So I'll go to properties for the reset IE homepage, start page. And firstly, you're allowed to specify your supported platforms. So what platforms is this CI applicable for? And we just left it the default, let it run on any platform. Settings, so here's a setting I create. And you can see the settings going to HKEY current user, software, Microsoft, Internet Explorer, main. And what we're going to look for there at that value is we're going to look for your IE start page. The value is going to be we want http://www.bing.com. I'm actually going to change this. So I'm going to say, what's our dumb server name? I mean our great server name. Win-4. I'm going to have to look it up.
Do you remember it off the top of your head?
No, I remember Win-4. I remember there's a DSKT in there as well, but I remember in the stuff in the middle.
Try just opening IE. It might be the home page.
Think so? Localhost. That helps a lot.
That does not help.
That does not help me a lot. I'll do what I was going to do before you so rudely interrupted me. What was that? What was I going to do? I was going to do NBT stat. I was going to do...
Host name.
No, I'm going to do this. There we go. Now, that's not going to help me at all either, is it? How about if I copy that?
Do you need two functioning hands to make this go?
I think I got it.
All right.
I think I got it. We do that, and then we do that, and now we go over here, and we get rid of what I started typing.
It's pretty impressive being a right-handed person.
Look at that. All right. Thank you. Demo's done. Yeah. Thank you. What we want for our home page is we want all the Internet Explorer websites, when you launch it off, to go to our application catalog that Mark showed you earlier. So CM application catalog. And I'll go ahead and do a zoom it and see if that's correct. CM application catalog. Very good. Good. Okay, that's what we want for our website. And we're going to say remediate non-compliant rules when supported. So we want to know that. We want to go ahead and fix this. And if you want, you can specify your severity level. So I'll say this is critical. If somebody's gone in there and changed the home page, which might be a, you know, a phishing filter type thing, phishing site, I want to go ahead and know that. And I'm saying reset it here. So we'll set that. And then the compliance values again just says, hey, reset this home page and remediate yes. So I've set that one. And the next one, I'm not going to change anything, but I'll go ahead and show you what the other one is. We're going to go ahead and deploy. And that is clear the typed URL history. And this one actually is, again, supported platforms the same, settings. We're going to do a reg clear. And this is going to be script-based. So it's going to be a script-based scenario. So script was one of those, I think, 12 different options we had in that one slide. And this is just the VB script. It's going to go in there and look to see has the end user typed in any URLs that we're going to remember and then do auto-completion of them. And the scenario would be maybe they browse to a website that's a phishing site and it's automatically changed the URL. So if they go ahead and start typing, it auto-completes into this phishing site. And we don't want that. So you want to be able to go ahead and clear that list of websites that they've typed in. Not the URL history, because you want to let them go and browse to them manually, but the typing for the auto-completion stuff. So we're going to scan for that, and then we have a remediation script. So that's a discovery script, and then here's a remediation script to go in there and change that or delete those entries from that type URL site. So we've got these two created for us already. Just due to time, I'm going to not create one on my own. And then compliance rules, remediation, yes. I won't create one, but if I have time, I'll go back and do a creation of them. I want to make sure we get through the scenario first. Configuration baselines. We're going to go ahead and if I want to see, I got these baselines here. I don't remember what's in malware cleanup, so I don't remember what that guy's going to do. I can just click the baseline, click show members, and it will show me all the configuration items that are in that baseline. So I can see that I have a baseline. That's not the one I want because that's the smart screen filter one. That's the one I demonstrated for you earlier. Now, if you happen to see these, what we call sticky nodes here, and you want to get rid of them, if you close your console, start the console back up, they go away. You can also do a right click and do close and close nodes so you clear out that node that you want. Let's see this one, reset system security. And you see that one's already got those two configuration items in it. However, reset revision 4, let's go make sure that's the proper revision. Revision history. 7 and 4, yep. Okay, we're good. So now let's go ahead and take this baseline. And there he goes. And we'll go ahead and do the deployment. And you can see here's the baseline that we look. I can go and grab other baselines I want to deploy at the same time if I want to here. If I want to do remediation, not just non-compliance reporting, I select the checkbox for remediate non-compliant, and then allow remediation outside of maintenance windows. By default, it will only remediate, scan and remediate inside my maintenance window. So if I want to allow that to happen outside that, I'll go ahead and select a checkbox. In our case, we don't have maintenance windows, do we?
Nope.
No, okay, so it doesn't matter. Now, if I want to generate alert, so here's what my in-console alerting experience is. Let me know when my SLA has not been met. The default is 90%. You can change that to whatever percentage you want to. And it defaults to give me 24 hours for my clients to download the policy, do the evaluation, which should happen within an hour, total of 2 hours, 1 hour for policy, then 1 hour for the randomization of the evaluation. and then report back state, which is another 15 minutes on top of that. Well, we're not going to be here tomorrow. I'll be here tomorrow, but we're not going to be in here at this demo. So let's go ahead and set that to today. And I know it does UTC, but I always like it when it shows my appropriate time, 2:50. And then what if I want to integrate with the operations manager monitoring pack, I can generate alert there if you wish. What collection do I want to target? I can do user collections or system collections. I'll do a settings management demo. And then again, when do I want to reevaluate? I want to do this on a scheduled basis so I'm always checking for compliance and then fixing, in this case, because I have remediation turned on. I go ahead and click OK, and now I've got that cruising. I'll give that a second to process. So just for grins, let me show you when I go create a baseline. Here, when I do an add, I can add configuration items, those CIs I've created or imported, software updates, so all that stuff Mark's already synchronized into our database. If I want to go ahead and say, oh, not only do these settings have to be set, but also this specific software update, which is really important for us, has to be implemented. So I can do that as well. And then other configuration baselines. So I might have a baseline for different departments, and then I have a corporate standard baseline, which includes those other baselines. Let me scan the accounting baseline. Let me go ahead and scan the development baseline, as well as the software updates and other CIs I want to go ahead and put in here. But that's all you have to do is just add in what you want to do for your baseline. Okay, so we're all set, ready to roll. Let's switch over to our client computer. So here's our homepage. So I'll just show you that again. I'll launch off IE. That's not the application catalog. Our application catalog is a little bit better than that. So that's not the catalog we want. And let me go ahead and unpin this so we can get up here. In full screen mode, you can unpin, I guess. Okay. I'll just drop down here. You can see there's some other websites in here for typing. So if I were to go in here and start typing here, where's the N key hiding on me? Then when, you can see it starts, tries to autocomplete, it shows me other stuff. So if the demo works correctly, that'll clear those out. And I can see that in the registry. So here's that registry key, type URL, and you can see those different reg keys here. So if the remediation works, it's going to reset my home page to the application catalog, and it'll remove these four or five different websites here in the type URL list. So we'll go to our client. We'll go ahead and close him down. Control panel, configuration manager. And there's your Adobe you deployed earlier. Oops, there's one. That's the malware cleanup that I showed you earlier in the overview session that reset the smart screen filter. So we got that one already. Let's go retrieve actions. And I targeted to machines instead of users. Another thing we do in ConfigMan 2012, it's for user policies. We retrieve them on a unlock event of a desktop. So if you have a Windows 7 client that's locked desktop, you unlock it, we retrieve user policies at that point in time as well as log on. So, okay, so that should have been long enough. And do a refresh here. And I got nothing. No. It'll come back. There we go. So malware cleanup, that's the one we ran earlier. And it's non-compliant, or it is compliant. It tells you the last date and time it ran. And then reset system security, not applicable, or not available. We don't know what the evaluation result is because it hasn't run yet. And again, it's got an hour randomization factor before this guy will kick in, sometime in the next hour. We don't want to wait, so we'll go ahead and do an evaluate. And now we're compliant. So it says it ran. It did its scoping of everything. Before I show you those things, let's go back over to our site server, to our console. And if you guys are wondering, those are all those pictures I took in South Africa on a safari. So they weren't here in Orlando, I don't think. Or certainly not in Seattle. You don't see rhinos around, or those are springbok, obviously. Where was I going? Oh, I was going to alerting. You guys threw me off track. So go back to the deployment space, monitoring node, and it was reset system security settings, and we'll do a run summarization. I believe it's hourly by default that these guys summarize, so we're going to go ahead and force it. Give that a moment to think. And then you notice down below, it shows you our statistics. Everything is zero. We don't know anything yet because we've not received anything back from any clients. And now let's go ahead and do a refresh. Go back down here. Refresh. We now, see, compliant already. So he went in already. So I'm not going to get my alert I wanted. because I wanted to get the alert, but I didn't get there fast enough. I should have showed the alert before I did the on the client end of things. If I want to see what the, if I did have non-compliant or other information, I can go to view status. And view status, it shows me what my compliant systems are. If I had any errors or non-compliant or unknown, I could click the appropriate tabs here and it would show me what the appropriate assets are for the baselines and the configuration items. But he already worked for me. So my all alerts up here, there's the malware ones that AJ had created earlier. Here's mine, reset system security settings modified by malware. And it says never triggered. It never triggered the alert because we've never fallen below our SLA of 90% since we've done summarization. So my client reported back too quickly. Normally, you're going to do this. You're going to give yourself a day, 3 days, a week to do your summarization, to do your compliance values, but I was trying to be fancy. But you did notice the other one that we did earlier, which was malware cleanup. You notice it got canceled. If you're hearing the overview presentation we did right first thing in the afternoon, remember that was an active alert. And then I said after we did the client sent in state message, we summarized, it would go ahead and reset, and it has canceled, so it cleared that one automatically. Okay. Go back over to our client. What are you guys laughing at? I didn't do anything. That's the problem. Okay. View report. And here it says we're compliant on our baseline, compliant on our two configuration items. Scroll on down, and it shows you that here's the website, what I was looking for. Here was the previous value, and here's the remediated value. And then it tells me that it did do some remediation also on that reg key with the custom script. So let's go see if that worked. So I'll just go to, let's close Internet Explorer, and we'll go ahead and start him up fresh. And now you can see it says application catalog as our website. So now it's loading the default application catalog. So anytime you launch off IE, it's going to go to our application store, which has all the applications that Mark has created and deployed to me as a logged-on user, any user groups that I'm a member of, and it displays those for me in the catalog, and I can go ahead and pick and choose applications I want to go ahead and deploy. And then the registry key, you can see it got rid of those other Win-4 LDs or whatever. But if you just want to see it in RegEdit, we go back here and we do a refresh. And I'll do a view refresh. And reset that registry key using the script. So it, in this case, we did a remediation by script, and we also did a remediation by registry setting. You can remediate registry, WMI, and custom scripts. And you saw two of these here. I didn't do any WMIs. But remediation is only supported for registry, WMI, and custom scripts. And the thing that you have to be aware of is that you can only remediate the same way you do your detection. So if I am scanning for a registry key, I can remediate through registry. If I'm scanning WMI, I can change that WMI setting. If I want to remediate by a script, I have to do my discovery by script. I can't do a file system-based discovery for a configuration item setting and then do a script to remediate it. So I can't do that. Okay, so we have that. Now, let's show you how, let's say you were doing file system-based stuff, and you want to know your non-compliant systems, and you want to be able to create a collection of them for targeting software distribution. So go back over here, and we'll go back to our assets and compliance node. Go back to our configuration baseline we have right here, and you go to deployments. And here's my deployed to settings manager demo. I'm 100% compliant, my start time. This is going to be really hard, guys, so be careful. Create new collection, and I want to know, I'll say compliant since I don't have any non-compliant, but just assume it's non-compliant. The collection name is going to show you the baseline that you have, and then the target collection you have, and then the type of compliance, compliant or non-compliant. So in this case, it's that full registry thing, and then what my target collection was, and compliance. Click Next. Membership rules, it's direct, or excuse me, it's a query-based membership rule. We know what the appropriate attributes are to look for in the database for compliance or non-compliance, whereas we just told you in 2007 how to do this on your own. One thing to be aware of, don't select use incremental updates for this collection. It's not supported for DCM objects. And we do document this in the TechNet documentation. And we do that. We do that. And bingo, we have a collection created. And here it is, reset system security settings, modified by malware, settings management demo, compliant. And then just give that a second to update is collection membership. You see I have one member, and then I go ahead and do a show members, and it will give me my appropriate systems. Okay, I got 10 seconds, so I'll do this really fast. I'll talk faster for you. Now, I'll just go in here real quick and say test, or yest. Yeah, yest is good. Give me a break here, I'm one-handed. And I'm just gonna show you real quick how to browse. I'm gonna do a browse, I'll take registry. I just click browse, and then it shows me my local computer. If that's what I want, great. If it's not, I can type in FLA demo desk client.
Did you enable remote registry?
Oh, I don't know. It's not my demo. Apparently not. Yeah. So you would just type in the computer name, you would click connect, and then it would appear here in your list. You would expand out, and you just go ahead and browse to what you're looking for. And once you've found that, you just go ahead and select the item, and then it fills in everything for you. You can change your name, then you go in there and set your compliance rules, and you can designate what you want for compliance and remediation and so on if you want to. But that's how you browse the Goldmaster system for file system, for registry, and gives you more capabilities. Otherwise, you just go ahead and create things on your own. With that, we're a minute over. Mark took more time than me, so we're a minute over. So I'll go back to my slides, and I think I've...
Hey. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, have a great week. And here's a bunch of blogs. Jason did a great job on blogging on software updates management. So you'll get these slides, go to all his blogs. He'll get a lot more coming and a lot of great how-to videos and product docs. See y'all at the Expo reception here a minute and 37 seconds ago.